Patagonian indigenous people of the first English sailors and also those of its political prisoners. The film tells a historical tale as revealed from the not-so-silent seas. The Dark Crystal will have three showings this week at 10 p.m. in a magical elf fantasy brought to life by Jim Henson and Jack Oz on Connie's Top 10 of Kids Movies that adults can enjoy just as much. For all current dates and times, you can go to www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. This hour programming on WEFT is sponsored by our community partner Jets Pizza. Jets uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jets Pizza stores are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign. Their number 217-352-3333 and 1907 West Springfield Avenue. Their number 217-352-9992. You can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Peggy Wrench from the National Kidney Foundation. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Community Radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with mental health recovery advocate Sarah Lay. But first, disability news for the week of April 11th, 2016 from Disability Scoop and Inclusion Daily Express. As dozens of lawsuits are readied for trial, a civil rights commission has found reason to believe that Disney has not adequately accommodated theme park visitors with disabilities. Responding this week to complaints from three families about disability accommodations at Disney World, the Florida Commission on Human Relations said that, quote, reasonable cause exists to believe that an unlawful practice occurred, end quote. The complaints came after Disney overhauled its access policy in 2013. Prior to that time, visitors with disabilities could obtain a guest assistance card at Disney parks in Florida and California, which often allowed them to bypass long lines for rides and other attractions. Under the company's current policy, however, individuals with special needs are offered a disability access service card, which enables them to schedule a return time for one park attraction at a time based on current wait times. Now the company is facing lawsuits from 69 families of children with autism and other developmental disabilities who say that the new system violates the Americans with Disabilities Act by failing to appropriately address their children's needs, leading to meltdowns. The first case is set for trial in August in the U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Florida. For their part, Disney has continually maintained that its practices are fully compliant with the ADA, saying that the company disagrees with the commission's findings and believes that the lawsuits are without merit. An unwanted trip by a man with autism to a Pompano Beach, Florida strip club has led to a new law granting expanded protections for people with developmental disabilities in Florida. The issue arose after Ellen Kleinert of Coral Springs, Florida, accused a business friend of taking her 29-year-old son with autism to a strip club in January 2010. The man paid for her son, Wes, to have a lap dance, and when he became upset, wouldn't let him leave or call his mother. The new Florida law, the first of its kind in the country, allows people with developmental disabilities to have an expert with them during a police interview to explain what's happening and to pose questions in a way the interview subject can understand. It also makes it easier for authorities to know who might need assistance by creating a voluntary new designation on state identification cards. In Florida, law enforcement officers must now, upon the request of a person with a disability or their parent or guardian, have a psychologist, therapist, or other expert present during questioning. The expert has to be paid by the requester, but in the case of victims, the money would be reimbursed by the defendant if convicted. Kleinert said, quote, if the police brought in someone who spoke Spanish or Creole, they'd have an interpreter. Now there will be someone who knows about disability and can guide them through the situation, end quote. About 4,000 Idaho residents with developmental disabilities won a class action Medicaid lawsuit last week against the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, a victory that will reinforce the due process of their rights as citizens. According to a press release Wednesday from the American Civil Liberties Union of Idaho, Idaho Chief Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill ordered IDHW to develop substantial additional safeguards to protect Idaho Medicaid participants. The ruling comes as an ACLU of Idaho victory in the KW v. Armstrong class action case, and about 3 months after IDHW abruptly announced that it would reduce Medicaid reimbursement rates for supported living and residential habilitation provider agencies. The lawsuit contended that the IDHW cut Medicaid participants' assistance without adequate notification or procedural protections, the press release states. The federal court agreed that IDHW, quote, arbitrarily deprives participants of their property rights and hence violates due process, end quote. Advocates for Ohioans with Disabilities filed a class action lawsuit against Governor John Kasich and the state of Ohio over what they say is illegal segregation of institutionalized people with disabilities. Disability Rights Ohio filed the complaint Thursday in federal court on behalf of 6 Ohioans with disabilities and approximately 27,800 similarly situated other individuals. The complaint alleges the state has not complied with the Americans with Disabilities Act and the U.S. Supreme Court decision Olmstead v. LCNEW. State officials pushed back on the claim, saying the state is working with providers. The lawsuit alleges people with intellectual or developmental disabilities who want to live and work in their communities can't because of limited state funding. And finally, with a new advertising campaign, a disability advocacy group is putting Hollywood on notice that it's not acceptable to mock people with disabilities. A quarter-page advertisement running in the Hollywood Reporter is discouraging use of the word retard and other potentially hurtful references to disabilities on screen. The first ad appears in last week's issue of the Hollywood Reporter, and 4 more will run over the course of the month. Hannah Jacobs is president of Family Member, a nonprofit focused on fair representations of disability in media, which is behind the ad campaign. Said Jacobs, quote, we are calling on the Hollywood community of standards and practices departments, screenwriters, producers, directors, actors, and comedians to consider who they hurt when their content contains material that mocks and marginalizes children and adults living with special needs and disabilities, end quote. The advertisement highlights recent public outrage after presidential candidate Donald Trump criticized a New York Times reporter with a disability. By contrast, the ad notes the limited public response to the 2008 film Tropic Thunder, which included the lines, "You went full retard, never go full retard," end quote. Jacobs said her group chose to focus its efforts on Hollywood because the entertainment industry is responsible for most of the content that both mocks and marginalizes people with disabilities, according to Jacobs. In addition to Tropic Thunder, she cited comments about little people and cerebral palsy in The Wolf of Wall Street and Larry the Cable Guy performing his, quote, retarded street gang routine, among other examples. Jacobs said, quote, "The ad sends a clear message that if you're offended by Donald Trump's mocking of a reporter with a disability, you shouldn't stop there. Mocking disability is not funny and shouldn't be tolerated," end quote. And that's the news for this week. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today with my guest on the phone, Sarah Lay. And Sarah is actually pretty local. She is from Decatur, Illinois. Sarah is a mental health recovery advocate, and she's going to share a little bit about her own experience today, and I'm sure give us lots of opinions of how our society currently treats people with mental health challenges. So welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. So introduce the listeners to yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to be on the show today. I have not exactly the most experience with having a mental health disability, but I do have some experience with it. I've experienced anxiety and depression a majority of my life, and I've seen firsthand like how harmful stigma can be to people. Whenever I was 8 years old, my mother passed away due to breast cancer, and my father was an ever absent presence in my life. So I didn't really have the best like family upbringing or role models. My mom had stated in her will that she wanted me to grow up with her brother and his wife. So I lived with them for a little while, but I was a very odd child. I didn't really understand death. I didn't understand how to really like wrap my head around it.
How old were you when your mom passed away?
I was 8 years old.
Yeah, very, very young for something like that.
Yes. And so I think as one of my defense mechanisms, I just repressed all feelings. I was very isolated and didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't want to be around people. My aunt and uncle didn't really understand how to deal with me, I guess. So I started going to counseling probably about age 9 or 10. And it was weird because at that time I had a lot of anger. So I would take it out on like the counselors and I would say, "I hate counselors." And as I started to get older and started to process things, I had a lot of difficulty with loneliness and not understanding why I had to be the one to not have, like, parents. I felt very orphaned. I felt like I couldn't really relate to anybody.
Mm-hmm. So you moved in with your aunt and uncle, and your father actually wasn't around after that, after your mom died?
Yeah, he wasn't. He knew she had breast cancer, and he decided to move to Florida. And then he tried to gain custody of me, which I thought was not very smart on his part because he was the one who left. But I'm very thankful that he didn't get custody because I do not think I'd be in the position I am today. I think I would not be in a good place had I lived with him.
So are you an only child?
Yes.
And so you truly were alone. Had you been close to your aunt and uncle before that?
No. I'd only spent a couple weekends with them.
Wow. So really a devastating situation. It's certainly understandable how angry you must have been as a child and how depression could essentially take over your life. Is that how you would describe it?
Yes, I would. And it really surfaced when I was in high school. I had decided that since I didn't really connect with my aunt and uncle, I asked my grandmother, my mom's mom, if I could live with her. So I changed schools once again.
Mm-hmm.
And switching, it was like my third school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in sixth grade. So from all the moving, I never really had a chance to build like those relationships that are really important at that time in your life.
Yeah, I can certainly hear that. And not only that, but if you are struggling with depression, that also is going to stand in the way of building relationships, is it not?
Right. That's very true.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think people understand how common depression is among so many people in our communities. What effect did it have on you when you were in high school?
I was very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I would cling to people, like friendships. And then I would end up pushing people away because I would either try to get them as close as I could or I would push them away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that that affected all of my relationships, both friends and significant others. And I learned later when I was in college that because I had lost both caregivers at the same time, I gained what is called an attachment injury.
Mm.
And so basically I'm constantly afraid that everyone's going to be here 1 minute and then gone the next. And I've learned to call it my anxiety monster because I'll start to get very, very afraid that people will just leave me. And I'm constantly worrying about that. And sometimes my anxiety monster will take over my whole life and it makes it very difficult to lead a normal, quote-unquote, life when you feel like you've got this other person inside of you that will come out and take over.
So
I struggle with that every day. It's almost like another full-time job.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Have you been continuously seeing a therapist all of this time, or have you, you know, is that gone by the wayside?
I stopped in my childhood. I stopped seeing a therapist. In high school, I would see, like, the guidance counselor. And then when I was in college, I really started to, like, seek out professional help.
Mm-hmm.
Some counselors were really helpful and others were not. When I started working full-time after I graduated college, there's a program called the Employee Assistance Program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice program. It allows people who work full-time to seek out, like, professional counseling.
Mm-hmm.
So I utilize that through my employer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. There are so many, or more employers now than ever that are offering that kind of assistance. So yeah, that's really, really valuable. But you know, there was, right. I don't know if you heard, there was a young man, 19 years old in Champaign-Urbana yesterday who committed suicide because of depression.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it is so common that people just don't realize. And everybody, I think, has to some degree depression. It's just that some people might experience it to a greater level or for longer periods of time than others. But it's not an uncommon thing. And I know that there are, I don't know if you have any statistics, but many, many people who suffer this continual depression or, you know, bipolar disorder, any kind of mental illness, frequently they may not commit suicide, but they certainly oftentimes consider it.
Yes, and I really agree with that statement. I was there myself.
So what turned you around? How did you decide to go on and fight the battle against, you know, the mental health issue of depression?
Well, I guess just knowing, like, I had support from the friends that I have made. They're supportive of my mental illness. My family is sometimes supportive. They're not completely supportive of, medications I take, but I know that they still care about me, mm-hmm. and that helps. Just finding, like, meaning and purpose in life, either through a job or I really like to dance. I try to get involved in the community, just different things to keep me going.
Yeah, well, you obviously successfully got through college and are working full-time now. What field are you in?
Well, I got my degree. I went to Richland Community College for 2 years because it was the cheapest route.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought I wanted to pursue a degree from Lincoln Christian University, but I didn't like it at that school. So I transferred again to Millikan University, where I obtained my bachelor's in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been drawn to the mental health field. I wish I would have gotten my degree in human services, but at the time, psychology was the best fit because it's more of a broad, but I realized that psychology is more research-based and I like being more helper-based.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but it's never too late.
Yeah.
Something to look at in the future.
I might go back to get my master's, maybe in like counseling or social work. I'm still not sure what I want to do. I currently work at Heritage Behavioral Health Center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a recovery support specialist, or our title is also called peer support specialist.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up gaining certification through the state of Illinois, so I'm now a certified recovery support specialist. And basically, we offer support and like assistance to people who have mental illness, and we like offer assistance on their level. So we get to tell, like, share our stories and our message of hope and our shared experience, like that we've lived mm-hmm. in our everyday work. So it's a cool position to work as a peer to other people with mental illness, because we can say, I can personally say I've lived with depression and I know what it's like to have anxiety. And then other people can say, like, I know what it's like to have bipolar or schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really unique position.
And it sounds like that. So valuable. I mean, I know as a mom of a daughter with a developmental disability, how much comfort and support I found from being around other people who were experiencing the same thing that I did.
Yes. And it almost helps. It helps the staff, too. Like, we become, like, a big family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's support from both sides, which is very helpful to, like, overall.
Is this kind of position common in facilities around the state? Is this a therapy kind of a organization, Heritage, or is it a residential program? What kind of program is it?
Heritage has, they kind of do it all.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a behavioral health center, but they offer, like, help for people who are going through, like, detox or rehab from substance abuse. They have a floor that helps children who have mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
They have off-site programs like their group homes that are residential.
So and is it common to have people in these types of programs, is it common to have mental health recovery people like yourself, or is that something that's relatively new?
It's very new. Our program was a grant that got started from the William versus Quinn lawsuit. The place where I work is called the Wellness Recovery Drop-In Center. And so they, from the grant, they wanted us to create a drop-in center that would be a place for people to go that have lived in mentally ill nursing home type places.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have those people who are coming out, because a lot of times they didn't have to, like, die in these nursing homes. They could function in society, but people just kind of shoved them in the nursing homes and forgot about them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get them out of the nursing home and back into society. And then where I work as a peer support specialist is at a drop-in center. And so the people who are coming out of those nursing homes will have a place to go that's a positive place for support. And then we're also allowed to have Heritage clients come in. And I know that it's been like, it kind of was around years ago, and it's coming back, like the recovery movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so needed. I mean, there's been this big push, I know, in the Champaign-Urbana area about, you know, the stigma related to mental health and you know, all the conditions that people struggle with. And the stigma, I mean, I'm so grateful to you and for others who have come on the show to tell your stories, because I think that hearing the story and hearing your voice helps people understand that you're really no different from them, and that people with mental health challenges are no different from anybody that they know in their lives. So thank you so much for doing that. We only have like a few seconds left, but is there any message that you would like to give the listeners about, you know, something that's important, something that you would like to say about your experience in your life?
I guess I just want to let people know that there might not be like a magic pill that can cure everything, but there is still like a light at the end of the tunnel. I've been in the darkest place before, and it seemed like there was no hope, but I kind of just had to take it one step at a time. And now that I am in recovery and I focus on my mental health every day, there's things I have to do every day to keep myself well. And I've realized not every day is going to be roses and butterflies. Some days are going to be really dark. But I wait for that next day where I do have the roses and butterflies. I recognize that recovery is an ongoing journey. And it's just important to kind of look at the bigger picture instead of focusing on just all the negatives that come up.
Thanks for joining me today, Sarah Lee, mental health recovery advocate.
Thank you very much.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com, or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week. Yeah.